are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
Welcome to the Serious Growth Podcast, where the truth is told. On today's show, we have Frank Gigante. Frank, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
So I know that you're way out there in Rochester, New York, huh?
Yes, I am.
I'm just curious, what's the weather like? I'm a weatherman.
In the 50s. It's gray, a little rainy today.
Is that
not California weather?
No. Let me ask you this: I assume that not all of New York is the same weather, or is it?
No, we're on the colder end of things.
Oh, you are?
Not the coldest areas of the state, but definitely not the warmest.
So you guys get a lot of snow?
We get some snow, yeah. We got good deal of snow. Not this year so much.
Are you close to Buffalo? I don't know where I'm at.
I'm about an hour from Buffalo.
They get a lot of snow there, though.
They get a lot of snow. They get more than we do.
No, thank you. I am a California boy. You know, we got a lot of problems in our state. All you do is look at the news, and you'll see. Yeah. But I tell my wife all the time, I said, but in my opinion, there's a reason that 30 million or, you know, however many people that live in this state live out here, because it's actually pretty nice. The weather is really – I'm a weather guy. I don't like weather. I like nice weather.
Yeah, I'm a little envious of you.
Yeah. Have you lived most of your life in New York or in your area?
No, I came up here for college. I'm from Long Island, outside of New York City.
Oh, okay.
I've been up there ever since.
Yeah, I think when I went to Long Island when I went to New York. I've been to New York a few times, mainly just to catch a plane to go somewhere else. I've actually spent a few, quite a few days there just learning about – I was in Manhattan, Greenwich Village, that kind of thing. But I think I took maybe a tour to Long Island. Is that possible?
That could be, yeah.
Yeah, anyway. Okay, so let's talk about Frank Gigante, okay? I see here that you are a teacher.
I am. Yep, I teach high school.
Oh, high school. Mm-hmm. Have you always taught high school?
Pretty much, middle school and high school.
Middle school, high school, okay. And obviously you were, I met so many people in Vegas. I assume that you and I met and we talked. But, you know, as you can imagine, that whole weekend there was crazy.
Yeah, that was quite a weekend.
Whoa, baby. Is that the first time you competed in Vegas?
That was the first time I was out there.
Okay, so again, tell me how you did. How did you do on that show?
I placed what would be 10th in the pro men's bodybuilding.
Okay, and that was a pretty tough class, as I remember.
Yeah, that was a great class.
I was
great people up there.
I was pretty amazed at the quality of athlete because back when I was competing, the natural guys, you know, they were nowhere near that quality. It's pretty amazing how far that sport's come along. And so that was very impressive. Now, you competing in Vegas, I assume that you had to qualify somewhere. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, I qualified back in the fall, last September, at a show in New Jersey.
Okay, so how long have you been competing?
Well, I started when I was around 20-ish, I think 20, 19, yeah. 20. I competed for a few years, took about 15 years off from competing, still trained hard. And then I got back into it, and I've been competing again for 10 or 11 years now.
How old are you now, if you don't mind me asking?
47.
47. Mm-hmm. Man, I remember the good old days of 47. Two more months, I'm 65, man. I tell you what.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, so when I was in my 40s, I was competing also, and I was I was at my best at 41. I started late, though. I started at like 27. You know, these guys, a lot of these bodybuilders, they start when they're like 18 and 17.
Oh, yeah.
So they got a lot of time already put in. That's why you're kind of old back then, although the sport now, because of, just better conditioning, maybe better dieting, whatever, the athletes are older and they look better, you know.
Better science, yeah.
Yeah.
So I've seen guys older than you compete that look phenomenal.
Seriously. No, I know because, you know, after I did this, I took a 13-year layoff. You know, after 41, I had a bunch of crappy stuff going on in life. You know, life kicks you in the butt all the time, seems like. Right. And that's just the way it is. It's not an excuse. It's just the way it is. So I took some time off. And then I got that wild hair. You know, one of the things, Frank, is listen, most of the people that come on this show, you have a passion for what you do. I already know that. You know, that's kind of the common theme among the people I've been, you know, interviewing, whether it be the athletes or just people in other areas. You know, there's a passion there. That's kind of a common theme. So I decided one day at the age of 54, I thought, I see stupid questions. I wonder if muscle has memory, because we're told that that the body, the muscle has memory. I believe it in blind faith, you know. Absolutely. Especially when you're younger, you know, it's like, hey, eat this muscle dust and it's going to put on 100 pounds of muscle in 10 days. Okay. So I just believed it, you know. So I just thought I'd try it for my own self to see. Well, actually, it does. You know, I came back and I needed another year to be pretty close to where I was. But yeah, no, the body, it does have memory. And but like you said, I competed in the old man's masters. In fact, I competed in Pittsburgh. Okay. And the classes already then, a lot of quality guys at 50s and 60s. It's amazing what's going on, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And I think, of course, you know, if you make it a lifestyle with more repetitions underneath your belt, you can only really, in a lot of ways, get better. I was actually, lean-wise, I was actually better than I was when I was in my 40s, to be honest with you. You know, that's how it goes, and that's kind of the good news. But my question is this. I'm always curious to know how you got into the sport to begin with. Were you an athlete when you, like, really young?
Yeah, I was into sports, and I was a gymnast in high school.
Okay.
And I was probably a freshman in high school. My dad had gotten me a weight set for Christmas, you know, one of the little weeder benches with the plastic cement weights and the, you know, the book and he you know, was like, oh, you should, you know, lift weights. And he, you know, did, you know, he'd come home from work and, you know, did you do your workout today? And, you know, as a 14-year-old kid, some days I did, some days I did.
Right.
But, you know, my gymnastics coach was a big influence because he pushed, you know, weightlifting and weight training in the off season.
Yeah.
And little by little, that became, you know, more on days than off days of me hitting workouts. And at some point, the passion ignited. So I think probably by the time I was 16, you know, back when there was no internet, I was waiting every month for my subscription of Muscle and Fitness to show up in the mail and, you know, devouring it from cover to cover.
Things have changed, haven't they?
Indeed.
I was the same way, you know. Well, okay, so let me get this right. Your dad bought you a weight set, a plastic weight set, a Weider weight set. By the way, I met Joe Weider. I used to advertise in Muscle and Fitness way back when. Joe and I had lunch together. Anyway, that's another story. I'm more interested in your story. So the Weider plastic weight bench. Okay, but you, it sounds to me that you actually got maybe more of your actual. Because how did you know what to do? Did your dad say, hey, just go over there and do some benches and squats? Or did you learn that from your coach?
I remember it coming with like a workout plan, like a little workout book. The little outlined pictures. And
you
know, I remember creating like a chart on my wall of, you know, all the exercises and the sets and reps and the dates. And slowly started from there. And, you know, then reading magazines and then going to like my high school weight room and things like that.
Yeah.
And it just grew.
Imagine that, because now this is how things have changed. People just go to YouTube now and just, you know, put something in the browser. Cause in my podcasting, I've asked the same question to people. I said, well, how'd you learn it? I said, YouTube. I go, you gotta be kidding me. You learned how to pose. You learned how to train on YouTube. They told me that, you know, and I find that really odd. Maybe, you know, someday, someone will find it really odd that they, you know, that I learned it just like you did. I opened up all the magazines and did it that way. But, you know, time just keeps moving on. It'll be different another 20 years, probably. I'm afraid to see what that's going to look like, but whatever. Okay. So you started learning that. And then, so you started weightlifting at that point. So when was it then? Did you actually apply your weight training to your athletics back then, like your sport?
Yeah. I mean, that was the idea. I was getting stronger for gymnastics and things like that. And as high school ended, so did my gymnastics career.
Yeah.
And by then I was into bodybuilding, and within a year or two I was competing.
So you went from training a little bit for gymnastics to bodybuilding.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I want to ask you a question with regard to gymnastics.
Okay.
Gymnastic is the sport itself. Is it built on, is it based on, do you have to be really strong or do you have to be explosive or do you have to have a combination of the two?
Combination of the two, definitely.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So can you tell me what is the strength part of that sport and what's the explosive part of the sport?
Yeah. Well, the strength part, a lot of the moves, especially on like an apparatus like rings, high bar, parallel bars, all of those require a good deal of strength to kind of control your body in a certain right. plane. The explosiveness comes with, you know, hitting the board on vault or doing any of the flips and tumbling on floor exercise. Yeah. I did not have that explosiveness. Floor was not my thing.
Boy, if you don't have that in that sport, then you're dead in the water, right?
Yeah, you know, that's pretty much why my career ended. You know, I could handle rings, I could handle pommel horse, I could handle vaulting, you know, parallel yeah. bars. I was not a floor guy, you know.
So those guys, when they're like, if you don't mind me asking, when they're developing that explosive power, is it coming from their legs?
A lot of it, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of it.
You know, one of the things that some people don't understand, shockingly, a lot of trainers don't understand, is like a squat. People think that a squat is an explosive move, and it's not. It's a strength move. It's not explosive mm-hmm. power. You know, they don't know that, which is kind right. of shocking to me. And I always, you know, one of the things, reasons why I got back into this thing, Frank, after all these years of layoff, is actually because of social media. It's social media's fault, because I started reading some of this stuff. I'm going, wait a minute, that's bullcrap.
Yes, you know? I agree.
Yeah, and the more I kept reading, I go, wait, there's a lot more bullcrap than I thought, and it's worse than I even thought.
Yes.
And so it's like, oh, shit, I'm getting pissed off now, and that's not a good thing, you know? Yeah. But yeah, actually, it woke me up a little bit, to tell you the truth, what's going on.
I'm sure, yeah. No, social media is great, Ooh. But now there's information overload.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to figure out what's accurate and what's misinformation.
Yeah.
You know, for yeah. people that are just learning or don't know.
Oh, brutal.
That could be damaging, because you just listen and follow everything, you know?
Yeah,
too much misinformation.
Yeah, you know, I think maybe eventually things will shake itself out and correct itself. I had an interview with a guy that, he was actually a producer. He did, I don't know if you heard of the movie Fathead.
Okay, yeah.
Anyway, so he's a producer, and he had that, because I was kind of like almost whining, I guess. He must have thought, I go, man, social media is just screwing things up, and there's a lot of fake trainers out there, and like what you were saying. He goes, well, you know, but the social media at some point may correct, because it does eventually expose those people.
Right. But
the key is, how many people do you hurt in the meantime, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And even, oh, anyway, that's a whole nother. Okay, so you went from gymnastics to bodybuilding. All right, now that's another level. So yes. At that point, did you just keep learning firsthand experience, or did you find a coach, or how did that next level for you
happen? Both. I joined an actual gym, you know, and back then it was a gym and not a fitness center or, uh-huh. You know, and I learned from people there. I, you know, hooked up with, I guess you'd say veteran, you know, lifters or,
yeah.
you know, bodybuilders, trainers that knew what they were doing and, you know, I was willing to listen to them and, you know, take their advice and learn what I could from them.
Yeah.
Kept reading the magazines and things, and, you know, kept training on my own.
Yeah. I think that's the best way to learn, Frank, you know, because once you do that, especially when you become a trainer, and this is where what's really missing now in the industry is a lack of firsthand experience,
mm-hmm.
You know, and when you go through it and on your own now, you know, Albert Einstein once said, true knowledge is through experience. In other words, my dad told me this in a different way when I was younger. And he used to say, it's hard to replace firsthand experience. And he was absolutely right, even though I thought when he told me that, he was absolutely full of it, you know, because we all sit with our parents, you know, how that goes.
Right, right.
But as not only that's powerful, because that gives you immediate credibility when you've actually taken that path, and like you did, and you've mm-hmm. actually, you know, pertaining to the sport of bodybuilding, you actually put yourself on stage. And what right. a lot of people don't realize is everything that goes into that road that we go on. And it's not, look, it's like that in a lot of other sports too. We're just obviously talking about the sport of bodybuilding itself, you know, right. and to yeah. learn that stuff from firsthand experience, and then when you can get it to a point where you can reproduce results, that's when you become a master in your industry. But my goodness, how many years does that take? I mean, you know, it takes at least 10 years, maybe more. Somebody told me way back when, they said, and I couldn't understand why they said that. They said it was a guy named Don Ross. He'd been around for a long time. You know, these guys know stuff. And he says, no, it takes 10 years. This is back when now, and I know the things, right. They said it takes 10 years before you can get up on stage and be quality at like a national or world level. And I'm thinking, how could it take that long to do that? But, it actually did. But, you know, who in the hell wants to do that? The average person's not going to want to stick that out. So when you're willing to take that road and are able to produce and reproduce, you know, I've always said that the real trainers that are out there, the legit ones, can tell you why. And too many of them can't. Now, it sounds to me like the path you went on, you started learning about that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, very much.
So how many years then after you started in bodybuilding was it before you got on stage, and where did you compete, and how was your experience for the first time out?
Let's see, my first time, so I probably had been lifting for 4 or 5 years. I had gone to a show way back when at Hofstra University on Long Island. Bev Francis was putting it on. She was,
I know who also, she is. Yeah.
Yep. The guest poser.
Yeah.
Female bodybuilder Rich Gaspari was the other
boy.
Guest. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love him at the time. Yeah. You know, he's my height, Italian, you know, he was from Jersey, I was from Long Island.
Oh man, so a lot of things in common.
I had my dad take me to go watch that show, and I told him, you know, next year I'm gonna do that show. And sure enough, that was my first show the following year. And it was, you know, for my first time, it was great. I mean, I learned a lot through the process of getting contest ready and learning how to pose and, you know, all the stuff that went into it. It was my first and last, you know, non-drug tested show. At that time, you know, all that stuff was kind of kept hush hush, Nowadays, you know, everybody's like, oh, I use this, and this.
Right.
Here's my list. Let me put it on my YouTube channel.
Right.
Back then it was like, well, do those guys use stuff? I clearly learned there's a difference.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I got up there, you know, I did my thing. I learned, I had a good experience, you know, for my first time out. And it didn't stop me. You know, I went back to the gym and kept training and did more shows.
Therein lies the difference a lot of times. But I have to tell you, I don't know about you. Did you remember your first show? When I did my first show, Frank, you know, of course I was like, prior to the show, I was like doing thousands and thousands, it seems like, of hours of posing, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And son of a gun, man, right before I went on stage, I forgot everything about my routine. I don't know. Oh, yeah. Like, did you guys, we had to do it like an hour, not an hour. We had to do it like a minute and a half back in those days. And how long did you have to do with your routine? Did they cut it down? Because at some point they cut it down. When I came back from being out of the sport, it was instead of being a minute and a half, it was like a minute. So how long was your posing routine?
I think my first one was about a minute and a half. I remember using like cassette tapes to try and record different clips of songs to put together for a routine.
Brother, you never forget that, do you? It's like horrifying.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I was like, I totally went blank, and then the craziest thing was, after I came off the stage, people came up to me, oh, your posing routine was so good. I'm thinking, well, shit, I didn't remember anything. You know, hopefully somebody taped it so I can see what I did. I mean, it was brutal, man.
Oh, yeah, it was. It was something to be up
just
there.
That experience right there will run people off, you know, because it's horrifying, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it is.
And then you somehow get through it, and you probably, one of some of the best advice I got from a guy that had done a lot of competing. I was actually working out at this gym. He said, look, what I recommend that you do is only learn about 4 or 5 poses. You know, some of the mandatories.
Right.
Don't learn too many poses. And then he said, slow down. I'm going to tell you this right now. Slow down. Because you're going to think that you're going slow on stage when you're doing all that posing and you're still going too fast. And,
oh, yeah.
And he was right. But it's so damn uncomfortable to go slow because you're freaked out up there.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to get you. I mean, I'm speaking for myself. I mean, it sounds like you have something similar, right?
Oh, yeah. First time out. Absolutely. Oh,
God, amazing. You know, but that, you know, I knew at that point, that first show for me, Frank, was the thing that just, okay, I had said, okay, I changed my career after the first bodybuilding show that I competed in. I was on the dairy business. You're Italian, you know, I'm Portuguese.
Right?
Portuguese okay. families back then, at least it's still, are a lot of people are dairy people, dairy farmers, right? Mm-hmm. And I was the next in line to take over the dairy, and that's what I was doing when I got into this sport.
Wow.
After that first show, I went back to my wife, who is now my ex-wife, and I said, I'm changing careers. It's like, what? I said, yeah, I'm going to be a personal trainer. I don't know. When you started personal training, were there other trainers doing personal training in your area?
Yeah, yeah. When I got into that, I was college and after college. Yeah, there were people okay. doing it.
Well, when I did this, there was no one doing it. In my little town at that time, it was about maybe 60,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
The only place you could find a personal trainer was like for sure LA or San Francisco, maybe oh, wow. Fresno. You heard of Fresno? California, Fresno,
yep.
okay, Fresno, yep. maybe big. Otherwise, people thought I was a damn aerobics instructor. They'd ask me, personal trainer, what the hell is that? So I had to educate people. You know, it was actually a good thing because right. I had to go out and educate people as to why they had to hire me as a trainer.
Right.
So I don't, maybe you didn't have to necessarily, because at this time you had really personal trainers out there.
Mm-hmm.
You just had to, I would guess, create a distinction as to why people should come to you versus the guy down the road, right?
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah, that was more of where I was at.
Yeah. So did you get certified at that point or something? Or after like we started competing, when did you decide to actually start working with people?
Yeah, around that time. I think I was competing first and then the personal training just became a natural extension at some
yeah.
point.
Yeah. And then do you remember who your first client was?
No. No, I don't.
Yeah. When I was first learning how to get clientele, I mean, because like I said, no one was doing it. You know, I had another friend of mine. He gave me some wise advice. He said, look, go after friends and family first because they'll yeah. trust you. it'll give you some time to you know, sort of hone your craft.
Mm-hmm.
Without, you know, so I remember that, but I'll tell you what, man, my first client that I did, I still remember that. Again, doing clients for me, especially early on, because I'm assuming that you train in somebody else's gym, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And was that like a 24-hour fitness? What was that all?
It was the first ones I trained at, I think it was a Bally's Fitness.
Uh-huh.
And I worked there.
So you actually worked there? Did you work for the Bally's itself?
No, I think I worked for the personal trainers in the Bally's. They were contracted through them, and I got hooked up with the trainers.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah, see, what happened with me was once I didn't have a place where I could train in my own studio. So mm-hmm. I went to the gyms and the health clubs in the area, and my pitch to them was, hey, I'm going to bring a client to you. Or maybe the client, the member was already there. I said, but I'm going to bring up either a member to you. I'm going to train them.
Right.
And they'll pay your whatever the monthly fee is, but I'm going to train them. You know, that was all good and fine and well and dandy mm-hmm. until I got really busy. Then all of a sudden the greed gland kicked in. And they said, you know, you're going to have to start paying me as a trainer. We want to count your action now, you know?
Sure.
Now, at this point when you're doing that, but the fact that they already contracted with a personal training group, you were protected that way, so to speak.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And did you have to give up like a certain percentage, or were you able to charge what you wanted?
I think they set the prices, so they got a percentage of things too.
Okay. Now, how long did you work there? I'm assuming that you took another step, right?
Yeah, I trained there, and then you know, once I came up to Rochester and stuff, hooked up with several personal training companies and did that for a while. And then eventually, when I wasn't competing, I wasn't really training anybody. and then got into a stint where I would train people on my own again. Mm-hmm. And then I can kind of just, you know, do it on my time and my money type of thing.
Yeah. So you were able to create an alliance with the gyms that you're at, and they wouldn't bother you too much?
No. Nowadays, the last ones I've worked with, it's more of, you know, they, you know, if I continue to bring them clients, you know, where they're, the people I were work was working with would join their gym.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of worked out for them too. So it wasn't too big of a deal.
See, that was my logic. But mm-hmm. then, you know, how many clients were you at one time? Were you mainly training then in just one gym? Or see, what I was doing is I was going from gym to gym. I had, you know, and I was traveling, which was, you know, that cuts into your efficiency because you got downtime going to these, you know, various gyms. So were you just working in that one gym?
Yeah, for the most part. And sometimes I would go to other people's gyms if they were members there just to kind of help them out a little.
Yeah.
You know, and get them set up on things. But
there wasn't any issue with liability, because out in California, we like to sue like crazy.
Thankfully, no. I didn't run into too much of that.
I'll be darned. So, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get back to your competing again. Okay. After your first horrifying experience, which led you on to your career, so to speak,
what was
your next step? Okay. So when you came in, did you find that you really saw where your weak spots were and strengths were? And how did you decide, you know, how to go about creating the body that you wanted?
Yeah. I think at the time, you know, it was probably, like I said, 19 or 20 when I started. You know, most things for me, I thought were weak points, just because I'm just, you know, I've only been doing it a few years. I'm starting out, you know, I have the guys in the magazines to compare it to. You know, I'm not there yet. So, you know, it was just a kind of like a persistent education, you know, of, okay, I'm going to train, you know, harder or differently. I'm going to learn new exercises. I'm going to learn new angles to train, you know, angles for things. And then keep reading about nutrition. There was a lot of nutrition work in there. And just, you know, continue to educate myself in order to be better and apply it to what I was doing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how it, you know, it just kept developing, just kept putting in the time.
Yeah. And then, so where are you at now then with your personal training? Are you able to make a full-time living at it, or do you choose to do that? Where are you at with personal training?
No, I don't. I still do some coaching and training and stuff, more as needed or on the, you know, as people come to me and ask about it. You know, and I found a lot of people, you know, because I do teach full-time. I have, you know, two daughters, and so they keep me busy enough. You know, so when I'm working with people, it's more of, I find it's a lot less like, hey, we're going to meet at the gym at 10 and I'm going to, you know, give you a back workout for an hour.
Yeah.
A lot of times it's more of people that want information and how to do things. And if I can just show them, you know, go through a workout with them a couple times so they get the form and the feel down, and we explain, you know, why they're working certain muscles or what their weak areas are. They can get to the gym on their own, you know, on their own time schedule.
Yeah.
And then we can meet up and talk about, you know, nutrition or lifestyle stuff that's affecting their goals or what their goals are.
Yeah.
And it becomes more of a coaching model rather than a personal trainer model.
Yeah. Like a life coach almost.
Right.
In a way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So are you able to, I'm being nosy, but are you able to charge for this? Do you charge for it, right? Or do you just do it because you just love it?
I do both. You know, most times I'm charging something for it because, you know, my time and experience are valuable
something.
To me.
Yeah. No, it's worth something for sure.
You know,
no doubt about that.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
It's not a full-time job or full-time living by any means.
Let me ask you a question, because I like to ask this, because I've interviewed so many trainers. If you had your druthers, would you like to be doing this, a trainer, as a full-time job?
Oh, yeah. I could see coaching doing it all the time. And you know, I had written a book, as I believe you know.
Yeah, and I want to talk about, I want to get into that.
Yeah.
More. Yeah, but.
So that's kind of where that leads to, is becoming more of a you know, coaching model and where I could reach more people at once rather than a one-on-one appointment, you know, in the gym someplace.
Yeah, and that's actually pretty smart. That's an efficient way. You know, if you can actually capture that, you know, that's actually a smart way to go. You know, I've been doing the personal training business for 38 years. And the day that I went into that business, I've never worked again in my life, Frank. And that doesn't mean that there hasn't been all the stresses and rigors of a normal, regular, I call it a regular job, you know, because personal training for me has never been a normal job, you know, compared to what we classify as a normal job. I would think that a teacher is a lot more a normal job because I had that. Listen, I caught heat for what I did because I was supposed to be a dairyman. And, you know, people would say, even my wife, why don't you just do something that's normal instead of this, you know? And, and Frank, at that point, because my childhood dream was to be a professional athlete. And I didn't make it, okay? One of my kids did. He played for the Kansas City Royals. He was a Major League Baseball player. And so they lived, and my other one played European football. I mean, they went to a level that I wished that I could have.
Right.
So when I didn't make it, Frank, being on the dairy for me was not my passion. And that ate me alive after a few years. And I told myself, because it was really eating me alive. I think most people, listen, I'm not saying that doing teaching is not a passionate, you know, a job that doesn't require, it has nothing to do with that. It just wasn't, the dairy wasn't my passion, you know?
I understand.
But I told myself at that point when I was really unhappy. And I said, you know, if I ever get a chance to have that buzz, you know, that passion, that drive, that want to get up in the morning and, you know, tear it up every day, that I would not question that. And, you know, and I thought this is unlikely because now at this point when I made that little promise to myself, I'm 27 years of age. I've got two kids. I'm working on a family dairy in a town that has no personal trainers. You know, so I thought, well, all I can do is make that promise to myself, and whom the hell knows? Well, guess what? That one bodybuilding show, I got that buzz again, and I jumped, and it was awful. For my ex-wife, it was awful for her. I didn't understand it at the time because I was so involved in what I was doing. I just knew it didn't matter what the obstacle was. It didn't matter. I was going to overcome it. Fortunately, I did. And you know, there's even though I'm telling you that it hasn't been a time since then that I've worked. It was a rough go, baby. You know, just the reality of it. But that's in every business, you know. But I'm always just curious to know, you know, when because a lot of the trainers that I'm interviewing are doing this part-time. And some of them would like to be a full-time trainer. The one person I actually interviewed said they wouldn't. And they have their own interesting take on this thing, you know. So this is going to take us now to – I really want to get into your book, The Warrior,
Everyday Warrior.
Now, what inspired you to write this book?
This comes from a few years of trying to build an awareness or following, or not even a following, a community, I guess, on social media. Because 2011, I earned my pro card in bodybuilding. And I had said to my trainer, we were out for pizza and a soda after the show. I said, you know, what do we do with this? You know, I don't, who cares? I'm a bodybuilder, you know? No. And, you know, I do, but in the normal world, nobody cares. Right. You know, they see you, they say, big deal, you have big muscles, you lift things up, you put them down.
Right.
that's not me. You know, I don't fit that, you know? Yeah. Well, you know, how do we encourage people or inspire people or do something with it?
Yeah.
And, you know, we've gone through several versions of how that might look, but it led me to doing a lot of motivational stuff online. And I would put out these, and I still do, the Monday motivational mantra. And it's a quote from something that I've read or see or look up, and it just spoke to me, and I'll write what my take was on it. And that turned into a lot of people, you know, it resonated with people. They came back to me or they would message me and, oh, you know, this is just what I'm dealing with, or I needed to hear this today. And it led to conversations. I would do some online Q&As and things. And you know, people just started asking, you know, for more of this. Is there a book? Is there a book? You know, when are you going to put it out? And so that's how it, the idea came to fruition. And so I took 52 of my mantras with the blurb that I wrote about them. And they're not labeled or cataloged in any way. So it's, you know, they're not dated, I guess. So yeah. There's 52 of them, which equals a year, but you don't have to start in January. It doesn't say March 10th on it.
Not time sensitive.
Yeah. If you, you know, have a goal and it happens to be, you know, June 17th, boom, there's the start of week one.
There you go.
Go for it.
No better time to start than the present.
Yep. And so the rest of each mantra follows or precedes a few pages of an action guide to kind of break down what is it you want to do this week? You know, what can you do this week? Because you can't do everything, but you can do something.
Right.
And then there's a kind of little format that I would use just in my own life that I put in the book of how do you measure that? How do you actually attack it? How do you turn it from intention to action to accomplishment in a week's time? And then how do you set yourself up for success the following week and build upon it?
Yeah.
And so that's the book in a nutshell.
Yeah, and that's smart the way you've got that set up. By the way, I've seen your on Instagram. I've seen those posts that you put up there. So, and they're good ones. I like those. And what I like about what you're telling me is so many people never get out of wishing mode. They wish that they could do this, that, and the other. And what I like about what you're saying and what your book is saying is that you're giving me a way to actually create those things that need to be done to get the result, you know, and that's
exactly,
you're pulling people through that. And a lot of people just don't have that, you know,
right.
And I don't know about you, cause I haven't read your book, obviously. And is it being sold on Amazon?
It is available on Amazon. Yes.
Okay, I'll pick one up cause I'd like to read it. But, you know, most people just need some guidance with stuff like that. And for you to put it in a way that I think that you're doing, to make it not seem so damn overwhelming for a guy like me, if I'm just the average person,
right?
I mean, wow, you're helping a lot of people all of a sudden, right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's my goal.
That's your goal. No, I see your goal. I see your. We call that in the world of marketing and advertising, we call that your USP, your unique selling point. Because as you know, all you have to do is look on the market and all the stuff that's out there, everybody thinks their stuff is the next greatest thing. But right. When you really start saying, okay, what really makes your deal unique? I think part of your uniqueness is that, first of all, you believe in the stuff that you're doing. Mm-hmm. I'm attracted to that. And then you're telling me how to do that and possibly a why and how to get to the next level.
Right.
And what better thing? I mean, that's very inspirational. So I think that, you know, this is an interesting way, another way to get to be in the personal training business, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Indeed.
When did you write that book?
Just last year. It came out November of 18.
Okay.
So it's just pretty recent. It's been a little over a year. Yep.
Yeah. So did you self-publish this or did you get published? How did that work out?
Self-published. I had somebody helped publish it, the Zebra Inc.
Oh, okay.
But she sat down and worked with it so that I could kind of, you know, do a lot of it on my own. And she helped put all the details and finer points to it. And
yeah,
we published it.
Yeah, I know. I published a book. This was in another, I mean, I put out a lot of training courses, but the one that I got published through a, you know, publishing company was the one I wrote about the strokes I had 8 years ago. And so it was a really interesting process. So I know the process that you went through on this deal here. I don't know about you. So what I'm sounds like what you did in this book is that you did a mantra and then you expanded on that mantra. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. And there's 52 of them here. How many pages is this book?
Oh, well, let's see. Here's the book, by the way.
Okay, good. I was going to have you promote it at the very end, but that's good. We want to see it.
Yeah, it's a little over 200 pages.
Oh, man. That's quite a few pages.
Yep.
So let me ask you this. The book, I know that bodybuilding, for example, transcends not just the sport of bodybuilding, but from all the lessons that you learn because of the sport, it teaches you about life. Yes. There's a lot of life lessons. If you've been, and I'm assuming that you've seen some of my posts, and I talk about the Serious Growth Creed.
Yes.
There's a creed there. You know, there's six, those components are kind of like what you're talking about in your book, that we believe Absolutely. In, you know, and it's more those, that the Serious Growth Creed, just like the Everyday Warrior, correct me if I'm wrong, it's more than just something that you apply to bodybuilding or health and fitness.
Absolutely.
You can transcend, it transcends, right?
Absolutely does. This book is not just a fitness book. I didn't put any fitness pictures or bodybuilding stuff in it because it's a lifestyle. It's a goal. If you have a goal of getting a new job or finishing a paper for college or, you know, even cleaning your garage, you know, just sign, you know, whatever that task or that goal is, the end result can be insurmountable or seemingly insurmountable. This book is a way of, okay, let's break it down to something practical and measurable. And then how do I take action steps to get there?
Yeah.
And you build one step at a time.
I like that. And it's kind of like that, again, when I think about my own clientele, I don't train. I have two clients now left. You know, I just go in there and goof. I go in at 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, do my training. And I have a couple of people that just won't leave me. You know, they just, I said, look, if you don't mind me training and you want to be a part of that hour, we're good with that. But you know something? It's with my clientele, and this is what I think you're saying in your book, you have to make this thing palatable to people. So it's just like when they're coming in with me and doing their weight training and their nutrition and all that, if you don't make this thing user-friendly or easy enough to accomplish, they're blown out of the water. And it sounds like that's exactly what you do. And I think because of that fact, you keep a lot of people in the ball game, you know? Yes. But the thing, I can't really see the small print. Let me look at the small print. I can't see the small print here. And when I look at your Everyday Warrior, of course, I would think, well, this might be someone who was in the military, you know? And obviously, I don't know if you were or not. Okay.
I was not.
So the subtitle, what does that say? Because I can't even read this thing.
The Action Guide for Ordinary People Who Desire Extraordinary Results.
There you go. So that right there, you just said what it was, okay? I thought it was a military book, but that tells me it's a lot more.
I wrote it for the average everyday person, just, you know, the everyday warrior. But yeah, I do get responses from everyday people as well as athletes, you know, at various levels of their sport that have found this to be useful and have implemented its tools.
Yeah. And do you think that because you're on social media quite a bit, do you think that exposure on social media has helped you?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I think it has a lot.
Yeah. And do you have to be pretty active on there? I mean, I'm curious now from the business owner side, you know, how do you make,
I'm learning, to do a better job with it. But yeah, it has helped and, you know, I'm active at times. Sometimes I get a little quiet, but I'm trying to be more consistent and just put it out there more often.
Yeah. So it's like, if I come to you, Frank, and I said, I've read your book. I want you to help me just be, I just want to get overall, I want to feel better about myself and get in better shape. You know, is there something, what's your sort of your, maybe a protocol? What would you do for a guy like me? So I need some help, just basically, whatever. I need help and I want you to coach me. So what's the process that I'm going to go through when I come see you?
We would sit down and talk about what, you know, where do you want to end up? What your ultimate goal is? What are some things you have tried? How your experience was in pursuing those actions, if, you know, they were positive, negative, where you see your sticking points, perhaps what you struggle with most. And then we would start, you know, looking at where you are now.
Yeah.
You know, what is it you're doing right now or not doing that you could be doing, you know?
Yeah.
And then we build from there and we build slow.
Okay. So then if we're doing this together, are we working like we're doing right now via Skype or Zoom or phone call or all the above?
All the above.
All the above.
All the above.
And again, I'm being nosy. Are you now charging for this?
Yes. Yeah.
So maybe you could, because I want you to promote your, if you don't feel comfortable doing that, that's fine. I want you to promote your book and the service that you're providing. So, okay. So Frank, how much am I going to pay for this and what do I get? These are the questions I'd be asking as a customer.
Right. And pricing is something I talk about with each person. Right now, it's more of been promoting a book and promoting just getting the message out there than any coaching courses or stuff yet. I have had a few people that I've worked with around that. And it, depending on what they need, you know, some need a lot more to work through and a lot more one-on-one time and a lot right. more intervention than, you know, other people just need, hey, I need to check in with you, you know, once every couple of weeks just to keep me accountable.
Yeah, of course.
So that's different.
Yeah, that's a different price point altogether. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like with me when I'm talking with my clientele, it's funny because we're both doing the same thing, but kind of, I'm in a different dynamic. Like me, I'm in front of people a lot of the times, you know, doing consultations, but I'm doing the same thing as you're doing. I'm fact finding to find out, you know, where you've been, what's going on, what have been your stumbling blocks, that kind of thing. Right. And then we go from there. And so some people need 1 month. Some people need to be with 3 months. You know, you can start figuring that out. But, you know, you're new into this thing, so it's going to take you a while for sure.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So
where do you think you go from here?
Hopefully more speaking engagements. More conferences, more guest speaking, motivational speaking,
and creating. Are we going to be at the same?
We will be at Days of Inspiration in May. Yes, we will. Yep, down in North Carolina.
I'm looking forward to that.
Me too. I can't wait for that.
Yeah. Have you? Are you pretty successful in getting yourself speaking engagements?
I've had a few local ones. This one in May will be the largest one I've gone to.
Yeah.
So I'm learning. I'm definitely in the beginning stages of it.
Oh, it's going to be fun. You know, one of the things I didn't know I was good at was public speaking. I was frightened. I used to like drop classes in high school and college. Anything that had something to do with oral presentation, I said, don't forget that, you know? Right. And then of course, bodybuilding, you got to get in front of a bunch of people in bikinis or posing trunks. That kind of brings you out of your shell a little bit. Yep. But I really have enjoyed now getting up in front of people, even though I've been scared to death, you know, in the beginning. And so I'm looking forward to being there with you.
I can't wait.
I heard and saw that you were going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good. We're going to, I always tell people at the end of my show, I said, one of these days we'll maybe cross paths. And it looks like you and I are.
Yes, we will.
Yeah. So let me ask you, we're going to finish this thing up here. You have your book. So why don't you go ahead, if you'd like, promote yourself, promote your book, and tell us where we can find you.
Okay. You know, you can find my book, Everyday Warrior, The Action Guide for Ordinary People Who Desire Extraordinary Results. It's a workbook. It's not a novel. You don't read it cover to cover. It's available on Amazon. You can find it through my website, everydaywarriorlife.com. You can contact me through Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, Frank Giganti Natural Pro, or Everyday Warrior Life. I'm always happy to chat. Message me, you know, let's talk about goals, about where you want to go. But I'm always happy to help. And
nice.
Leo, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it. It's been a great time. It's real nice to talk to you.
Well, you know something, it works both ways, Frank, let me tell you, because I always learn from the people that come on. I've learned from you. I know a little bit more about, you know, stuff that I didn't know about. And so I appreciate you coming on. And, you know, making this thing an equal deal, so to speak. So listen, I continued success. I think you're on the right path. I like your energy. You give me your calming effect. You've had a calming effect on me. I've been told that I am high strung. So you've calmed me down today. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm going to go ahead and get your book. And maybe we can talk about that when I see you in May.
Will do. All right. Thank you.
All right, Frank. You have a good day. Okay.
You too. Have a good day.
Take care.
Bye.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.